coming back. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 217.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Hello, friends, and welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublich Jr. here with you today. It is late in the day on Tuesday, August 24th, 2021. I had some house guests over this yesterday, and I couldn't get into the studio because the studio is also where we put guests when they stay. So I'm running late today. But hey, welcome to the show. Welcome to The Art of Bombing. I have a great episode today. Today, I have a great conversation with a Minneapolis-based comedian, Tiffany Norton. We had a fantastic conversation. We talked a little bit about the pandemic and coming back and getting back into comedy after the pandemic, and a lot of other things too. So that's what's coming up on the show. Before we get to the conversation, though, I got to take care of some business. If you're a fan of the show and you've been keeping track of social media, you would probably by now have seen that I made a big announcement on Facebook about the podcast that I'm going to release this episode today and then an episode next week. And then the podcast is going on a hiatus. And by the podcast is going on a hiatus, that means I'm going on a hiatus from doing the podcast. Why that is because I'm just at a point where I need to take a break. It's simple as that. I need to take a break. Trying to prevent creative burnout. I spend a lot of time and effort working on the podcast. There's a lot of stuff that goes into this podcast behind the scenes. It's not just me recording these lovely conversations that I have. You know, I have to do the episode artwork. I have to do the audio editing. To do the recording, I have to do the guest booking, I have to do a lot of different things because I don't have this podcast isn't a big money machine that can pay other people to do all those things for us, which is fine. I don't mind doing this stuff, but I just need to take a break. I know in the post I said if and when the show comes back, more than likely it will come back. I just don't know when. Like I said, I need to take a little bit of a break. I have some other things I want to concentrate. My last semester of school just started this week, so I want to spend time concentrating on doing homework. I've got a couple accelerated classes, which means I'll have double the homework every week. So I got to make sure that I stay focused on that so I graduate. So that way I make the grade to graduate and get my degree, and then I'll be done with school. I have some writing projects that I'd kind of like to work on. And obviously, I want to focus on my stand-up comedy and that. So I'm going to put the podcast on a hiatus. Now, the podcast, though, will still be available. I'm not making it go away. All the episodes will still be available, all 218 episodes. Yes, I know this is episode 217, but next week is the last episode before the hiatus. So there will be 218 episodes that you can listen to if you haven't listened to all episodes yet. Plus, there's a lot of bonus episodes. I did a few episodes of the Between Bombs and a couple different things that are in the podcast feed. So you can go back and listen to all that. Just to let everybody know, I really appreciate all the outgoing support and love that I've been getting since I made the announcement of the hiatus, but I do want to make sure that I clarify that I am fine. I don't have any major thing going on behind the scenes that's causing me to do this. I just need a break. That's a lot of it. I put a lot of time and money into this podcast, and like I said, there's a lot that goes into it behind the scenes, and I've had some goals for the podcast, and I'm just not reaching them goals yet. A lot of the goals that I've set are for growth of the podcast. I want more people to enjoy this podcast, and I just haven't got to where I need it yet. And it is a little frustrating, if I'm being honest, but it doesn't take away from what we put out. I know I put out a great podcast, and many people do enjoy it, and I really appreciate that love and support that this podcast is gathered over the years. And so I just want to say thank you to everybody that's been supporting this podcast. It's been 4.5 years. It's been great. Again, I just want to reiterate that I'm fine, and the podcast most likely will be back. Just need to take a hiatus. I just don't know how long the hiatus will be. So keep that in mind. But more than likely, it will come back. So thank you again, everybody. I do appreciate that. A couple other things. With that being said, things that I'm concentrating on, my album recording is this weekend. Whoa, it's 3 days away. It's amazing. Strangers in My Basement. I'm filming and recording in my basement. It is open to the public. As long as you're not, as long as you're a nice person, you can probably come. All you got to do is go to blitzedentertainment.com and sign up for the free tickets. You do have to register for the tickets because I want to make sure seating's limited. That's what it boils down to. So if you're in the Twin Cities, mainly St. Paul, this weekend, August 27th and 28th, you can come see my live recording in my basement. It's going to be a good time. A lot of great comics are going to be on the show. I've got Larry Smith is featuring. He's been on the podcast. Good friend of mine, Tom Chilstrom, he's been on the podcast. He's hosting both shows. A couple other great comics that Jalen Russell, who's been on the podcast, he's going to be, he's actually recording it. And then he's also doing a guest spot. And then Derek Johnson and Mallory Manderfield are both going to be doing guest spots. So it's going to be a good time. So if you're in the area, come check that out. The hat contest, I originally said I would announce the winner September 7th, but there won't be a September 7th episode because I'm going on hiatus. That means the winner will be announced next week. So you still have a week to share our content. All you have to do to get registered for a chance to at the drawing to win the free hat is share social media posts, whether you retweet our tweets, share our posts on Facebook, share our stories on Instagram, or another way you can get registered is if you go leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Those are the ways you'll automatically get registered. You can do both things, and you'll be registered multiple times. There's no limit on how many times you get registered. So the more you share, the more chances you have of winning that cool hat. So that's it, I think, for all the news. Again, everything else, Art of Bombing, if you want some Art of Bombing merch, things like that, you can get that at the website, artofbombingpod.com. If you enjoy what I'm doing, you can leave a tip if you'd like by going to Buy Me a Coffee at buymeacoffee.com/dbublitzcomedy. Otherwise, thank you guys so much for supporting the show and enjoy this episode with Tiffany. It's a great conversation, and we'll be back next week.
And now it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
I'm a child of divorce, and I was a latchkey kid in the 80s. You guys remember latchkey kids? You know, yeah. Now they call it childhood endangerment or something, but whatever. You know, you just walk 3-4 miles by yourself. You had a key. That's how you defended yourself. No big whoop. So I was left a lot to raise myself. And so I raised myself on television, and I was in movies, and I was obsessed with the movie The Karate Kid. You know, great movie, right? Great American movie, you know? And it's mostly dudes clapping, and I'll explain why. Because it's a great movie if you're a young man, because it's a beautiful coming-of-age story when Daniel faces his fears and the bullies at school, becomes a man, wins the girl that he loves, the hand, you know, the whole bit. But when you're a lonely girl living in the suburbs of Woodbury, and you watch Karate Kid, you get the message that what you should do if you want a father figure in your life is go out into your neighborhood and meet an older Japanese man with a lot of cars. And befriend him. And as I mentioned, I lived in Woodbury, very close to the headquarters of 3M, so there was a lot of engineers, a lot of options for me. And I met some very nice men. And they would listen to me talk about my day while I was taking my bath. And, okay, I'm kidding about that last part. They didn't listen to me talk about my day. I just, watch me.
So you had a show last night?
I did. Oh, God.
It sounded interesting.
Well, you know what? I mean, it was well attended, which I'm always thankful for. But it was an all-you-can-eat buffet dinner cruise on the St. Croix. And I've done this before many times, but I have forgotten because of COVID there were no buffets for a really long time, and I haven't had to perform after a buffet in a while. Everybody's exhausted. Everybody's trying to get all of their money back, ticket price-wise, in pasta.
Yep.
And they're just sitting there like, you can see them yawning, it's Friday. And then I'm surrounded by gorgeous views of our scenic St. Croix River Valley, which is tough to compete with when I'm just really complaining about my life. It's not as cool.
Like,
oh, look, there's an eagle. What was she just saying about her mother? It's hard to compete with a good view.
That's for sure. A lot of distractions out on the river, I imagine.
Oh yeah.
I'm surprised that they had you perform after. I mean, I guess I get it. They want people to eat, but I almost think it's better to, like, once everybody goes through the buffet, then you start doing the show.
While they're eating.
But I know some people are like, well, we don't want to do a comedy show while they're eating. Yeah, but if we don't, they'll be too tired afterwards.
You're right. I mean, it's okay. What do you want? Do you want them to yawn, or do you want to hear them eating soup? Like, what do you want?
Exactly.
Like, what is, like, do you want to hear slurps or just, you know? And no one can get up. No one can leave. Because we're adults, so they're stuck with me. I'm stuck with them. No one can get off until we dock. So, like, buckle up, Buttercup. Here we go.
That's so true too. That's like that's like the embodiment of a hostage situation when it comes to comedy. Because if somebody doesn't like the comedy, that you're right, they can't go.
Nope, you can go to the upper deck. That's what you can do as a comic. That's all you can do is you can go up to the third floor and you can talk to the salty captain of the riverboat.
That's how people like that do cruise ships too. They talk about that a little bit, where they're like, "Yeah, that's the worst part is if you have a show that doesn't go well, you're stuck with the
and they're
audience."
Like, and you, I know, and then they're seeing you in their bathing suit the next day, like, "Yeah, nice set," quote unquote. That guy was not funny. And then, but that is also when you have one bad show, I think the worst thing that can happen from a bad show is that you breed the idea in someone in the audience. Well, that's easy. I can do that.
Yes.
And then you see them at an open mic. I've had that happen. Have you had that happen where someone saw you at an open mic or a performance and then they decided to do comedy based on that?
Not necessarily me particularly, but I've seen it at an open mic. Where, like, I was hosting an open mic, and just some bar patron was like, oh, this looks easy, and they sign up.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yes.
But nobody was like, oh, you made this look way too easy, let me try it. But who knows, maybe they were thinking that, and it was about me, but they just didn't say it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't generally come right out with that as the motivation, but like, he can do it. But you know what? You need that. Like when I was, because I was telling you when I got here and in lovely East St. Paul, East Side Pride.
Yeah, I see the signs.
I know this is my hood, from growing up. But I remember I was so terrified. They used to have, you're too young to remember, stick shifts.
I'm too young to remember stick shifts.
I think so. I don't see it. There's a little gray, but not really. You don't know.
Oh,
you're too young.
You're killing me here. You're so being so flattering. I learned how to drive on a stick.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay.
I know what manual transmissions are.
Oh,
I could still
busting
drive.
Out the technology.
Still drive a manual transmission.
Let's do it. Let's go.
Do they even make them anymore?
I don't.
I know they do, actually. I have a friend that just got I guess it's a couple years old now, but he got a newer car, and when he got it, he specifically
got it
with a manual transmission. Yeah,
nice. Yep. You know,
you do three on the tree. You remember them? See, I'm not as young as you think.
But you need that encouragement sometimes, right? Like
yep.
That was why I was scared to death to drive a stick.
And then there was this kid I went to high school with who I regarded as quite, I don't want to say, I don't want to be mean, but not the brightest bulb. And he had a stick shift. And I'm like, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And so, you know, who knows?
Yeah,
you may have unwittingly contributed to.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like that's applicable for like things like that where it takes like motor skills or if somebody can do it. But like with comedy, that's my favorite thing is when somebody thinks it's easy and then they go do it. And then you can just that moment when they say something and they don't get a laugh, you can see it in their face the moment they realize that it's not that easy.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh. Vindication.
Yeah. Well, and that really, that's, if you can master standing alone, naked in front of an audience and have one of your little thoughts, your little gems not work, and you can stand in that and you can stay with yourself, then you can be a comic. That's really what it is. You have to, you know, if you can look like, no, I planned it like this.
Yeah.
I kind of figured you wouldn't like it, but I told it anyway. Then...
That one was for me.
That was for me. Which is always my favorite when a comic says that. It never gets old to me. Well, that one was for me.
I know. That's something comics say quite a bit when a joke doesn't work. And it, I think that's probably one of my favorites, too. I say it sometimes. Yeah. I'm just like, well, I guess that was for me.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if this is a non...
Some of them are, but...
Some of them are. There's one that I closed on last night because they were giving me the rap because they were docking. Anyway.
You're like, hey, we're almost to the dock. Wrap it up. We need to get out of here.
Exactly. And I'm getting the hard rap anyway. I basically touch on every absolutely every like hot topic like and then I have like a terrible ending but it was great to leave it on that but that one is for me. I call the joke when I'm doing my set list Anthrax Boy. And it's about a date I went on after my divorce with this guy who had been in the military, and he invited me to an Italian restaurant. And I'm really not supposed to be doing jokes or bits or anything. But you'll see why I'm saying that some of these are just for me. We go to an Italian restaurant. He starts sharing with me that he was in the military and he's extremely pro-life. Because the reason why he's pro-life is because when he was deployed in the service in the early 90s, they were worried about anthrax and poisoning the soldiers when they were in, you know, the Middle East. So what they were doing was that they were inoculating these soldiers with small amounts of the anthrax virus to build up an immunity towards it so that they wouldn't contract it, hopefully. Well, in 1 in 300,000 cases, that can render a man impotent. And that had happened to this man. And he was extremely pro-life because the reason was his high school sweetheart had gotten pregnant their senior year, knew he was going into the military, had an abortion, didn't tell him.
Oh.
Now, I don't know how, you know, and then that's when you look at the audience and they're like, what the shit is happening? And I'm like, no, I think we can all agree as a group, no matter how you feel about any of those subjects that I've just raised, that is definitely a lot of shit to share before the bread comes.
That's actually funny.
Right? I make it so awkward. They're like.
It's creating tension.
Oh,
and then when you say that,
that releases
a lot of tension.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really funny. You know, and it's in a situation like that, that like outside of the joke, I kind of get his reasoning to be pro-life in a situation.
Correct.
Like, can totally understand that. That's like, I get it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, nothing that he said was wrong. And he had, you know, I mean, this is... That was his one chance to procreate.
Yeah.
And he didn't know it. At you know, like by 19, he didn't have that choice for himself anymore. So I completely understand. But I swear to God, I ordered a wine. The wine came before the bread. And the bread came. And I already knew all this. I'm like...
Yeah, that is a lot to put on a first date.
Yeah, so intimacy is not going to be, sharing's not going to be a problem for you. That's I guess that's a positive, as opposed to maybe past relationships.
Sounds like somebody should have did some stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Obviously not afraid to talk.
No, not afraid. Not afraid to share the deepest, darkest. Absolutely.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Well, that's why as a girl you don't tell – you don't go on a date, the first date generally, and tell people you're a comedian because
– Oh, I'm sure. I don't – I have a hard time telling people I'm a comedian anyway. Like, right. Just – I don't know why I feel weird about it, but sometimes I do. Because you know they're going to be like, oh, you're a comedian?
Yeah.
Tell me a joke, blah, blah, blah. But then on the other hand, I'm trying to get more in the habit of being like, I am a comedian. Here's a sticker. Go check me out. Like trying to find that line between trying to do the self-promotion, but also not overdo it to where I'm getting annoyed because people are like, oh, tell me a joke.
Well, I mean, and also, too, there's imposter syndrome because there's no one until they see you on The Tonight Show or something national.
Yep,
or something.
Some kind of a sitcom.
And it can't be some kind of weird thing that you have to subscribe to, right? It has to be within a basic cable package. Like, you have to be on one of those.
Or Netflix.
No, like my parents would never see Netflix. Like they will never love me.
As I said,
until I'm on 4, 5, 11, 9.
The older, that's true. The older generations, but I mean, there's most of the populace is familiar with Netflix, and when a comic gets a Netflix special, that definitely gives them some credibility or whatever. But
correct.
You're right, for everybody, it is the four basic. Channels.
I only wanted to do this so that my parents would be proud of me, and they'll never see it. and that's okay.
Yeah, well, that's one thing I was fortunate. My dad has seen me perform live a couple times. My mom hasn't, though, but my mom passed away, like, way before I did comedy, so.
So it's not her fault?
No, it's not her
fault. So we're not going to blame the mother this time?
Oh, no, it's not my mom's fault. She wasn't. I mean, kind of was her fault. I mean, she made a lot of unhealthy life decisions that led to a death in a young age.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I mean, but it's what it is. I mean, it's like I said, it's been close to 20 years. It's been like 17 years or something.
Oh, she was young.
Oh, yeah. She was my age. She was, I'm going to be 43. She died when she was 43. So
no way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
she
I'm
had
sorry.
A lot of, health problems, a lot of heart trouble and things like that. But on the same note, she didn't really do anything about
okay.
You know, she knew she had the high blood pressure. She knew she had heart problems, you know, but she smoked all the time, drank a lot, you know, was kind of a party person or whatever in her younger days, and didn't really, like, make a effort to try to, like, be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, just kind of what it is. It was always interesting to me because she had a heart attack at, like, 34, like, her first massive heart. Yeah, it was very, very young. And then from that point on, she always had a lot of heart issues. And I'm like, nah, that's why I try to balance. I mean, I'm not the healthiest, but I do try to balance my activities with drinking and things like that, because I'm like, oh, I'm just like, and I joke about this with my fiance a lot. She doesn't find it as funny as I do, but I probably got more of a morbid personality. I'm just like, I'm just waiting for that heart attack to come. I'm sure it's coming.
It's... That is,
but as a comic, that's how we can be morbid people.
Well, exactly. And also, we're always looking for material. And that's gold. Everybody loves hospital jokes. So.
Yeah, especially now.
Love it.
That's like.
That and airplane food.
Pro tip, comics, pro tip. Do all your material about hospitals.
I know. But it is one of those, because it's, you find this, I'm sure, as well. I think a lot of comics have been struggling with it. Obviously, the last 5 years have been bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Just with what's going on with the in the White House and the pandemic and, you know, natural disasters and shootings and all that stuff. And it's like, but that's the one thing everybody can come. That's one that you kind of, relationships are one of those things that kind of survive. You can kind of always talk mm-hmm. about. And hatred of doctors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except now, actually, it's actually because of the pandemic, we can't really hate. a doctor's that much anymore.
Unless they're preaching anti-vax and anti-science, because there have been a few of those, and it's like...
Yeah, but those are people that are doctor in the sense of you're a doctor, you have a doctorate in philosophy. You're not an actual doctor. An actual doctor believes in actual science.
I said that because that's exactly what happened too. I saw a video of somebody claiming that they were a doctor and they got their degree from Oxford, and they were talking about how they wrote all these medical things or whatever, and then people like fact checked it.
Yeah,
it was a doctor, but education.
Yeah, yeah,
in education, and he went to school in like Oxford, Florida. Or no, Oxford, Ohio. So like, and his books that he had written were all like on education. It had nothing to do with health. And he went and spoke in front of a school board about the negative effects of masking. And he was anti-mask, anti-vax, or whatever. But I'm just like, wow.
Do you know who the anti-mask guys are? Those are the guys that tell you as a woman walking down the street, you should smile.
Oh.
You're prettier when you smile. It's like, dang, that was my opener. It's gone. That was gold. Now I can't use it.
Yeah, you're exactly right on that, too. I could just, it just boggles my mind. I'm just, because I'm like, I don't know about you, how you feel about this right now, but as a performer, knowing that live entertainment is where we try to make our money, and after what we already went through with the pandemic, as it was, now we're seeing all this stuff rise, and I'm just like, I'm going to be out of a job again. And I'm just like, so panicked.
You know, well, and that was one thing, and this is a good example of it. But I think were you doing this podcast prior to the pandemic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
See,
I've been doing this for quite a while.
I thought so. I just didn't know if I was right about that. But you have to pivot, and you've got to have your outlet somehow, because otherwise it's just, I mean, you know, Shannon Paul and I do a webcast every Sunday at 5 o'clock. I'm going to plug.
Go for it.
On YouTube and Facebook. All that stuff. We call it the Black Unicorn, the White Witch. People get a lot of weird. They're like, what? Why do you call it that?
If you knew them, you'd understand. I don't even need an explanation, and I get it.
Right, right.
Just from knowing them.
Right. Well, yeah, Shannon and I are best friends, and we're the same, and then we're absolutely the opposite, right? And anyway... we started that. It was just her and I just doing 15 minutes on Fridays at noon, on Instagram live during, and we started doing it right after George Floyd was murdered. And it was just like, it was just a way to do something, because I was literally, I live alone. I have no pets, you know, I have a very, very polite family. We, you know, we talk once every 2-3 years, and, more often than that, but
sounds like my family.
Yeah, no, but I guess, but not totally. But anyway, like having that outlet, you know, and trying to figure out how to live in a non-live environment as far as like attendance, it's difficult to navigate. But you know, things like this, you know, you've got a good handle on it. I think people that weren't doing stuff like that or aren't sure how to do stuff like that are really having even a harder time.
Oh, absolutely. I would totally agree with that. Totally. Because there's a lot of people that were just straight up lost when it come to everything shutting down. And I'm not talking just like regular people. I'm more...
We're talking about comics. Yeah.
Emphasis on entertainment. But
And musicians.
Yeah.
And actors and actresses. Yep. And, you know, and how do we... You know, if you're a film guy, you can film stuff, or a girl. You know what I mean? You can. There's things you can do, but like, yeah, how do you pivot?
Yeah, exactly.
How do you still create content and like keep your sanity?
Yeah, well, I think that's why TikTok. I mean, I knew TikTok was already kind of popular, but I think it's popular. It really got a lot more popular during the pandemic
because
people got bored and started making TikTok videos.
Absolutely. Have you had Ashley Henderson on the podcast yet?
I have not.
Okay. Do you follow her on TikTok?
I don't.
Okay. You need to follow Ashley Henderson on TikTok. She's a comedian in town. Her TikToks are hilarious. She basically, and I mean, the editing is really good. I'm not sure who's doing her stuff, but she basically recreates and plays both the man and the woman in any like really awesome R&B love song from like the 90s or 2000s. Right. Like she'll do Ashanti. She'll do like whatever. And it's and you know, she'll do Jay-Z and Beyonce. And but she'll do both. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely, they are really funny. And I love music videos because I'm of that age, but they crack me up. And so, like, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard a lot of her stuff has gone viral.
Oh, God. I mean, yeah. there's a lot of her videos are 22,000, you know, yep. likes, you know, and whatever. But, I mean, she nails it, and she's such a good actress. So I encourage everybody to follow her.
Yeah, I'll have to get her on, try to get her on. I've only met her a couple times, so I don't know her very well. I've seen her, like, once at Sisyphus and then once at House of Comedy, or a couple times at House of Comedy.
You know, she's one of those performers that just has absolutely everything you can't teach. Just has it. Mm-hmm. You know, she just walks up.
Natural talent.
Yeah. Damn it.
Right. How do we get that? Speaking of trying so hard.
Yes.
Let's talk about a show that you did that wasn't necessarily great, you know, where you felt like you might have to narrow it down.
You're going to have to. I'm not trying to tell you your business as an interviewer, but you might want to just like isolate a year or a month or a week. You know, there's a lot to pull from because you are a very good producer. I had information,
well,
I had directions. I was instructions where to park. I was very impressed. That doesn't normally happen. I've done a lot of these things.
That's what I learned over the pandemic. That's how I pivoted. I went from doing my podcast just however to I need to step up the production side of things, and yeah. I got with emails and all that stuff, trying to be more professional with that. Because even when I do them remote, I do the same thing. I have another email that I send out for the remote with all the stuff. But yeah, so, well, if you want me to narrow it down, well, how about in the last year?
Okay. In the last year. Ooh, the last year. God, those first couple sets coming back after not being on stage for, you know, what? Oh, my God. A year,
yeah,
9 months. Much.
I mean, we didn't have in Minnesota. We didn't have it as bad as a lot of other places did, in the sense where like there were still things going at just lower right. capacity. If you wanted to go out, but at the same time, who wants to go out?
Well, the first wave, in the first wave, there was really nothing, and then the second one, they're like, all right, you can have 25%, you know, capacity or whatever it was for inside, and you know. It just felt really surreal anyway. But as far as I completely forgot what timing was. I was a mess. I mean, specifically, I'll give you a better example, but jokes that I just had down and had told a million times. I'm in the middle just fumbling all over the place. Just like, where does this go? What am I mean, it. My biggest fear is I was once, now I'm going to make this weird. Here's the biggest time I ever bombed. It was in the sixth grade. And I'll never really get over it, honestly. There was a play and a thing that a work that they used to do in school called Free to Be You and Me. I don't know if you remember this. It was, you know, kind of a hippie dippy, you know, Sesame Street kind of deal. And it was supposed to teach young kids about self-esteem and all that stuff. Free to Be You and Me. And I got the monologue. I had to read this whole, I had to memorize this whole monologue. I was dying, like memorizing it, flashcarding myself for weeks. I had it. I get called up there. Can't say a word.
Oh no.
Can't, just completely frozen. Can't say one thing. And the teacher's like on the side going, you know, whatever the first, and now I can't even remember. Like, I remember just that feeling. I cannot remember what the first line of the thing was. I know I had it memorized. And I just, and it was, it felt like forever. Just like, I'm sure it was maybe a minute, but it felt like eternity.
That's bombing. Bombing always feels like eternity. It doesn't matter how long you're bombing for. It always, like, you could be doing a 3-minute set, and if you're bombing, it does. It feels like an eternity.
Absolutely. It's true. It's absolutely true. And yeah. I've never gotten over that.
Yeah.
And I never will. But coming back after the pandemic, I had several of those where even though I was trained and I know how to, like, you know, get over it now, I'm not, you know, I'm not 12 anymore.
Yeah.
I've got a little bit more, but I immediately turned into that 12-year-old girl again with the whole gym, the whole school staring at me. Like,
wow.
I know.
That's traumatizing.
Yeah. Free to you and me.
Yeah. I auditioned for a play. I think it was in the seventh or eighth grade, my buddy convinced me to audition, and it was literally for one line.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm combining stories, but I just remember I was never good at public speaking when I was younger. Like, I'm terrified. Like, anytime I had to give a class speech or whatever, they were always horrible. But I remember auditioning for a play in middle school. And I was so nervous, and it was like for three people, you know, two or three people, and it was just terrible. And then I never again. I was like, yep, I'm not going to be a play person.
Right.
It's like I couldn't even get a part for one line. I was too nervous to say one line.
Well, but look at you now, though. But
I know,
I think everybody at some point in their life goes, it's like a hat. You try it on. You know, is this something I should be doing? Is this something I should consider? Is this something I'm any good at? And when you don't get the positive feedback the first time, I think a lot of people give up. I think people don't, you know, don't pursue it. And it's like, yeah, but if you keep thinking about it. And like, I remember asking my father when I was young, I said, Dad, do you ever get the feeling like you're supposed to be famous? Or anything, like, you've ever felt that way? He goes, everybody feels that way. They get over it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, okay. Like, this is just a thing.
Yep.
I'll get over. And then at 35, I'm like, you know what?
Not
I'm going to start doing stand-up comedy.
Oh, so you started when you were 35?
I started when I was 35, yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool. Everybody else was going on scrapbooking weekends, and I'm like, fuck this.
it's time to
sorry,
do something.
Sorry, language.
No, that's
edit. Okay.
Language is fine. Yeah, actually, I started comedy at 32, so
yeah.
Right there with you. But I also think, too, it's how bad you want something or how bad a person wants something, you know, when you're talking about the, you know, trying it once and then giving up. You know, if you really want to do something,
mm-hmm.
you'll do it. Like, for me, doing comedy was something I always wanted to do, and I did have to build up a lot of courage to do it the first time because I did struggle with the stage fright, and that was something I had to overcome doing stand-up, but I wanted it bad enough that I was able to do it and
yep.
then keep doing it to
yep.
where now, you know, even in the first couple of years when I would do shows, I would still get a little bit of stage fright and still be nervous and just, but
I
now,
still do.
Like,
I do every time.
I get a little nervous sometimes, but I don't, the stage fright's not there because now I've done it enough times where I'm like, well, even if this goes poorly, I'm still waking up tomorrow. It's not as bad as, you know.
Right.
There's worse things that could be happening to me.
Yeah, I usually 5 minutes before I've got to go on stage, I want to run away. I want to dart out. I'm like, why did I do this to myself again?
Why did I sign up for this crap?
Especially the day of, I'm like, like getting ready for the dinner cruise yesterday, I was like, "Oh God!"
So when you,
but it was nice.
Oh, I'm sure it's not. I mean, even if the show wasn't the greatest, or you know, it would still be nice because you're on a boat going down a beautiful river.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's one thing that's we always forget with comedy. We're too consumed with whether the show was good or bad like that, but we forget the places.
But
we're
I'm in
go.
The Bahamas.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like, I'm so mad, and I'm on this cruise ship. You're in Jamaica.
Yeah, exactly.
You could be bombing in North Dakota. It's slightly different.
Yeah, because there's, you know, 3 to 6 feet of snow everywhere.
Oh,
you
know?
And only a handful of people decided to take their four-wheel drives out that night.
One of my favorites, I remember, where was it? Oh, God. It was northern Minnesota, up by the Iron Range. I can't remember the name of the city. It wasn't Hibbing, but it was up on the Iron Range. And it was the Wednesday, if you're listening to this and you're not from the Midwest, the Wednesday, I don't know, maybe it's everywhere, but the Wednesday before Thanksgiving is one of the biggest bar nights of the year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Well, you're right. Definitely Midwest.
Yeah. And because everybody comes home
yep.
to visit because no one wants to actually live here, but we have to come back and visit Nana And yep. we want to go get drunk at the local bar. Anyway, so we're driving in this horrible snowstorm. It was Kathy Ladman, who, you know, has done The Tonight Show and all that stuff, and Benny Quash and I. And, I mean, 6-8 inches of snow, and we're just white-knuckling it all the way up there. And I'm like, man, no one's going to come. I'm like, I don't know, man. It's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I think they're going to come. We show up. Everybody, the entire town was there, and everybody was on a snowmobile.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's,
they're like, no one's going to come. I'm like, I don't.
That's definitely Minnesota.
All snowmobiles. The whole place, the whole parking lot is filled with snowmobiles. It was capacity. It was capacity.
That's good, though.
Yeah. Wasn't bombing. That was actually quite fun. Although then some guy proposed. Have you ever had someone ask if they can propose during your show?
No, I've seen it at comedy shows. I remember this happening at the Comedy Palace in San Diego during a show. Somebody asked and they were like, I guess. I don't know. It's weird when people want to do that stuff.
That Talk happened that night. The snowmobile people. That happened.
What did they say?
She said yes.
Oh, okay. Because that's where it's like, I don't think I could do that. Because I'd be like, Like, I'm used to the rejection of things because, you know, we're in entertainment. We get rejected all the time for things.
Right.
And bombing and sitting and all that. But I don't think I could handle a public humility like that where you propose to somebody in front of a whole group of people and they're like, I gotta think about it.
I just met you.
Yeah, right?
We're cousins.
This is our first date.
I know. Well, you know what? And Kathy's a pro. She knew. She's like, oh, I've seen this before. She goes, he can propose after my set.
That's smart.
Headliner. So always do that. At the end of the show, when I'm done, I will bring you up and I will give you the microphone and then you can do that if you would like.
Yep.
Because they wanted to do it in between my set and her set. And she's like, nope.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And that's smart because that just totally distracts from the show. It takes away from what the show is at
and
that
the
point.
Momentum that I just spent, yep. you know, being in there and I think I was emceeing, Benny was featuring, but yeah, I mean, it was, anyway, so note to self, don't do that.
Yeah, don't.
Well, have them do it at the end of the show.
Yeah, or just don't do it at the comedy show. There's way more romantic things than comedy shows.
I'm sorry, you couldn't spring the $12 for like game day at the Twin Stadium? Like, come on.
I was going to ask you, were talking earlier about, you know, when you came back from the pandemic, you're having trouble, you know, remembering your jokes and trying to, you know, be on stage and, you know, get the whole forgetting everything. Is there something that you do in particular to try to like get ready or like try to re-memorize the material?
Yeah, I'm pretty old school. I just write. I write set lists, you know, and basically I feel like if I've filled like both sides of a page, I never really know what order I'm going to say mm-hmm. things in. I kind of don't. I am so envious of performers that like it's just structured and like it's the same and like you know obviously the audience doesn't know that, but I get off in the weeds or I see something shiny and now words are coming out of my mouth and I'm like, oh God, this isn't really tied to that. Well, I'll say this. And so, but I have to write out a whole list and mm-hmm. it has to have all the stuff in it. And then I just hope that I remember.
Just remember.
Remember what it is. But my things are super modular. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever done the same set twice in the last 10 years.
That's something to be said because then nobody's going to get the same show when they go see you live, which is – that's pretty awesome. Because I personally have a pretty decent memory, but I'll rehearse like in my head. Like mm-hmm. I'll rehearse the jokes and stuff. That's what I do to help memorize the material or whatever. But I was just curious about that because that's one thing that's weird about stand-up. Like even if you don't do it for like a couple days or a couple weeks, we lose that like edge. Like it's so weird how you can take like a week or two off and you get back on stage and you're like, I don't even know what I'm doing. And I only took a week off.
You lose. So years ago, I used to, God rest, Bill Bauer great guy. I don't think you ever got to meet him. You weren't here yet.
No, I know of him, though. I knew who he was.
Yes. Wonderful man, wonderful performer, and really, 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 like, was the first legitimate, like, headliner that took me on the road and, like, kind of took me under his wing. So I applaud him in every kind of way. I don't even remember why I was saying that. Nice train of thought there, Tiff. Here's another example.
Speaking of going in different directions.
Speaking of, you'll never get the same set twice or a finished thought. But Bill told me every week that you're not on stage, you can lose up to 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And it has haunted me ever since. It's like, he's like, don't stay on stage too long.
Yeah.
Don't stay on stage. And I was like, at first I didn't exactly know what he meant, but then I did, because what would end up happening was I had just written a new tag. I hadn't performed in a while. Well, I would do it the old way and not put the new tag on it. And then, you know, I had built something out, but then I would only remember the skeleton of it. So I would tell it the way that it was originally. A lot of times I will default back to telling it the first way that it worked. Mm-hmm. Before I really actually adopt and build it out. So most of my jokes start out really small, and then I build on them over time if I can remember the goddamn taglines.
That's the important part.
Depends on how much wine I've had.
Yeah, that usually plays a big factor in memory.
Oh, yeah.
Or the lack thereof.
Right. Right. And then they're like, why is she yelling at us?
I don't even know what's happening right now.
It's true.
That's great. Now, I was just that's actually a pretty good observation on that too, the 5 minute thing, because mm-hmm. Yeah, you really can, and it's easy too when you like, because when you tell a joke over and over and over and over, you just like, it becomes like train thought, you know, like mm-hmm. you're just, it's there, so it's easy to revert back to telling it the way you did before.
Right.
But, you know, before you added stuff to it, if you forget that stuff. I've done that, too, like, with jokes where I've... Because, you know, I kind of do the same thing where I think of a premise and I think of the joke and then kind of build on and on and on. Like, I have a joke that I've been working on for, like, the last 5 or 6 months, and it's turned into a pretty good joke, but there's a couple times when I just, like, revert it... Not that I missed the tag, I just reverted to telling it the original way, and I'm like, oh, that was dumb. That's not even how this joke goes anymore. Why'd you do that?
But it is. I mean, and you know, it's there's so much you're taking in
mm-hmm.
on stage. You know, you're taking in the noise level, the engagement level of the audience, your own whatever's going on with you, mm-hmm. you know, yep. personally,
yeah. yep.
you know, and so it's easy to get distracted and you just go into, and that, well, it's like athletes. That's why they break you down and they train you like that, so that it's like in your muscles, you yeah. know, and that's sometimes that's how jokes are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Anyway.
Oh, no, absolutely. It gets that muscle memory. And then now I'm going to ask you, I like to ask a few standard things before we wrap up. One of the things I like to talk about, the bumming of bombing, which is a dreadful feeling you get after you bomb or have a bad set. How does that affect you? Like, how long does it last? And how has that changed over the years, the longer you've done comedy?
It's the reason I don't do comedy contests anymore. I have it on good authority. I'm not a pleasant person after I've lost a comedy contest.
As somebody had to pull you aside and be like, Tiffany, I got to talk to you.
Yeah, more than
you're
one.
You're not a good person when you lose a contest.
I'm not. I am. And I don't know why, but I am so competitive. I'm so competitive. But then yet I'll not want to try that hard at the same time. So I don't really know, like, how to put that together.
Like, you get mad if you get very competitive, but also don't want to put the effort in, so then you get mad when you don't win.
Right. and I get mad at myself, and I get mad. But mostly
so
I'm mad at myself.
It's projection.
Yeah. Pretty much. Wow, just actually solved some stuff for me.
I think we
just worked. I'm looking at your hand sanitizer bottle and it says Healing Solutions. That could be your new podcast. Yeah. Healing Solutions.
Healing Solutions, aka the Art of Bombing. Oh, that's funny. But yeah, and then when you this is a joke, or not a joke, this is a question I really love because it's intriguing to me to get the different perspectives from comedians. When you tell a joke that you know works, like, all the time, and then there's that one time it doesn't, or you tell a joke and it bombs, what goes through your mind at that moment?
Then I laugh. I'm like, that to me is hilarious. I'm like, okay. You know? Because I don't necessarily, like, swear a lot. I don't necessarily talk about a lot of, like, dirty things specifically on stage, but I do like to... I like to use a lot of triggery words, especially in small towns that are going to elicit some kind of a reaction.
You like to stir the pot? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Quite a bit. You know? A little bit. And but if I know it's a joke that works and it has worked, I'm like, well, they're just not into it. And that's okay. And I might even say something about it. It's like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes we do have to address the elephant in the room. I mean, yeah. Some people will be like, oh, I don't like it when comics... You know, a joke doesn't work, and then they address it and try to get that easy laugh or whatever. And it's like, well, you got to do something. I mean,
well, you're releasing the tension because exactly. they are. Hey, this is the thing that I think a lot of people forget as far as motivation while you're there. These people paid money, got dressed, got a babysitter, made arrangements. Someone had to decide who was going to get to drink that night and who wasn't because someone's got to drive. Like, there's a lot of things that happen before they get to those seats.
Yep.
And they're invested in you. Whether you realize it or not, they are, because there's always one person who wanted to go to the comedy show, one person who was like, meh. Yep. And so the one person whose idea it was really wants you to do well.
No, oh, yeah, they do. I mean, most audiences at comedy shows, like a comedy club, they want you to succeed.
Yes.
They didn't go pay money to watch a comic
do all this work.
Do terrible.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So when it doesn't work and you've kind of taken all the air out of the room, I don't think it's, you know, people like to talk about, like, oh, that's hack or this is that. No, it's in radio and it's addressing what happened in the room. If there was a change, a palpable change in the energy in the room, you should address it.
Yeah, and sometimes you need a good reset. I mean, I've seen that on comedy shows where something happened or whatever, and the comic just was like, just addressed the situation and did a total reset and got the audience back. I just saw that not too long ago. A friend of mine was up here in the cities and did a show, and he made a joke about the comic before him, all in good fun, not like, you know, it wasn't mean or anything, and got nothing. And he started to do a couple jokes and still got nothing. And finally he was like, okay, we need to just talk about this. I know what happened. I wasn't being a jerk, blah, 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 blah. And he like just reset and then did the rest of his set. And the crowd started, you know, they started reacting to him.
Well, and that's always a dicey move, making fun of the previous performer. It's always risky to me. It's not one I usually take, just personally, because if they liked him or her.
Yeah. Well, and he wasn't necessarily making fun of them.
Oh, okay.
He just said something.
He was calling back their material.
Made a joke.
That's fine.
That was kind of a callback or something.
That's fine. I mean, and it's fine to do. I just, there's a couple of performers that I've worked with that they really like to start that way, where they make a snarky comment about the person who was just up.
Yep. And that is very dangerous.
I mean, it's risky.
It is. Yep.
You know, but I think, like, here's an instance where I should have done it and I didn't do it, and I'm still upset about it. Years ago, I was in Vegas for this World Series of Comedy deal, and the guy who got up in front of me, I didn't know most of these comics were from all over, so I didn't know who anybody was. I wasn't familiar with the material. I didn't know what this guy was going to do. Good-looking kid, looked like an actor. And he gets up on stage, and he does a pterodactyl impression. And he's screaming into the mic. Now, bear in mind, this is like a 5 o'clock show in Las Vegas. Everybody is 80. They have their hearing aids in. He's reset. He's blown out everybody's hearing aid in that room. For how much he's eating that mic. He's putting that mic in his mouth like it's a dick. It is so loud. And I was so focused. And again, comedy contest. I was so I come out there and I don't address it. And they never got on my side. Had I just said, give it up for Pterodactyl Boy.
Yeah, or
you
something.
You know, like, because I don't like to do it like that, but I should have. I should have addressed that because I was like, I'm going to speak a little quieter for everybody to have their have a little break on their ears.
Yep.
And yeah, I should have said something.
But see, but even that, there's a difference between addressing something that happened and then making fun of like another comic or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
true. Too.
Like it isn't necessarily the same thing. And even with my friend's case, he was making a joke about himself that also called back to something that other comic did. And the audience was just like, nope.
No.
And then he just did a hard reset and then it was fine. He like, he just put it out there. And I've seen that happen another time where the comic, there was people heckling and we were trying to get him to quit the whole show. They heckled everybody. The final comic got up there and he just went and sat down on the stool in front of him and he just was like on it, just being honest with them. He said, you know, you guys are a terrible audience. You have one job. Like he just totally went into like teacher mode. Like he was a like he was addressing a high school class.
Yeah, like he's it, the team just lost and coach is giving the speech on the bus ride back to the school.
Yeah, like it just he was just like your one job is to be quiet and enjoy the show and you're not doing it. You're the worst audience I've ever seen.
I love that.
And like he just like totally reasoned with them.
Yeah.
But he did it in such a polite way because he wasn't mean, he wasn't rude about it. He just like had a heart to heart and then did a set and crushed. It was amazing. Just watching that, it was just like, wow. That he just totally just real was just real with them and got him to behave.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that he just powered it all down.
Yep.
He just, you're going to act correctly.
Yep. He just, yeah, that's exactly it. He just like totally reset the energy in the room is what he did.
Yeah.
And then because of that, they were within the whole rest of the show.
Yeah.
But yeah. And just to watch that, it was like, wow, that was pretty good.
That's awesome. I wish I would have seen that. I would just be looking at their faces like, ooh, you're getting talked to.
Yeah.
You're going to the principal's office.
Yep. Definitely helps when, you know, because there's so many comics too will handle that situations like that in a bad way where they'll get mad and the anger comes out and then that just escalates versus, you know, resolving whatever it might be. When you have a bad set or after you bomb, what do you try to do to, or even when you have a joke that just isn't working, what do you try to do to improve or learn from that experience to improve the next set?
Well, I usually kind of go back to the drawing board if it's a joke. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a lot of times too, I have a hard time, which is weird. I have a hard time listening to my stuff and like watching myself or, you know, but I'll really try to analyze, did I actually tell it the right way? Because sometimes I'll accelerate things or I'll drop a word and then I'll, you know, like a lot of times when something doesn't work, I'm like, oh, that's right. Because you didn't say the one thing.
Yeah.
It makes it make sense, you know? But yeah, I try to, but really honestly, what I try to do to improve is to just not really put as much, if I really spend time being like as upset as I want to be about things, like I would get nothing done. I think the most healing thing I could do is just go, ah, well, you know, screw it. Mm-hmm. that's the thing that happened.
Just let it go.
Try to let it go as quickly as possible. But it's not easy necessarily to get over sometimes.
Yeah, some of them hit hard, that's for sure. All right, now we're getting towards the end of the podcast. I like to go out on positive stuff, fun stuff for the remainder. I have an Art of Bombing playlist on Spotify called the Get Pumped Comedy Playlist. And it's not necessarily, doesn't have to be a song that gets you pumped for comedy, but just something that gets you pumped. Do you have a song that gets you pumped for things?
God, it varies. It's, you know, often it's, this is, I like Pantera.
Okay. No. I could see Pantera definitely getting somebody pumped.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking Hostile is my jam.
Hostile?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's fucking Hostile.
Yeah. Well,
okay. Oh, sorry.
Okay. I'm sure.
I'm doubling down on the F word here.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Right. You're like, I want it to be known that that's the name of the title. That is the name of the song.
Well, I certainly if I finally, you know, get to meet the band, I don't want them to think that I'm misquoting.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You would hate for that one time you were on a podcast and you misquoted and they're like, yeah, you can't meet the band now.
We heard about you and you've been asked to leave.
You're no longer welcome here.
Nope. And all that work on the fan club just for naught. Anyway.
All went to shambles. What's been one of your favorite gigs that you've done so far?
Oh, wow. See, yeah, that is positive. Well, I didn't expect you to ask me that. I'm not prepared for that.
Well, you should have been. It was in the email. Obviously, you didn't read it.
I did. I gave it a good cursory glance this morning. I was like, "Where am I driving to? Oh crap! I was supposed to send in pictures, and there were instructions. Damn it!
I'm not used to structure in podcasts. Usually, you just show up.
Yeah. I'm not. This is all
most
new. There's a
most
list.
People
it's,
aren't.
It's typed. It's printed on a real printer.
I know, it's like you're like in the Twilight Zone. You don't know what to do. It's like, what's going on?
I know. It's like a regular radio station in here. I love it.
Gotta be pro.
If there was a traffic log on this desk, I would know you were legit. Are you okay? Oh, no. He's going to spit. It's a spit take. I got a spit take. Yes.
You almost got a spit take.
That's awesome.
That was pretty funny.
That's you know what? Those are my favorite sets, to answer your question. I had a lady one time completely spit take at the House of Comedy at the Mall of America, completely spit take her Bud Light in her best friend's face during one of my jokes. I was like,
oh my God, that's amazing.
Anytime you can get a snort, anytime you can get someone to snort, that is a treat and a hug and amazing. I have one friend that I love to invite to comedy shows for that reason, because if you get her good, she will snort, and it's hilarious.
Snorters are the best.
Absolutely.
comedy shows.
They really are. But a show that I had a really good time. I think it's just a general type of show. There's not one that necessarily like sticks out more than another. But the general type of show is, I really love it. I really love, this is going to sound really out there probably. No one's going to have this answer. My favorite is small towns. I love, you're like their king for the night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they want you to come over. Yeah. They want to bring you breakfast. They want to drive you around. You're like their little celebrity for the evening.
Yep. Everybody comes to the show.
Those are my favorites, like, because it's big fish, small pond. You know what I mean? There are so many incredibly amazingly talented comics in this market and all over the country, of course. Yep. But Minneapolis has a really great scene, right? And you can get anything. And so it's hard sometimes to think of yourself as unique or special or, you know, that. And so when you go to these little towns and they're like, because I was last night I was doing a show with Nick Piantek, and before COVID, we did a gig in Wisconsin. And when we drove up, it was only about 2 hours away. I said, well, we'll drive home after the show. We won't get a hotel, because hotel wasn't included in this particular one. And he's like, oh, I really don't want to drive back. I'm like, yeah, neither do I. I said, but we are going to a small town. I said, if we say on stage that we need a place to stay, we'll probably get one. And he's like, what? I'm like, well, we probably will. Because I've done it many times. That's a little pro tip if you're light on cash. Mention that you have no money, that you need a drink, and you need a place to stay. Otherwise, you're driving back immediately after the show and you can't party with them. And so, sure shit, we get off. He gets off stage. He starts talking to these people. They have a B&B, and they gave it to us for the night.
Nice.
And yeah, so like those kind of shows are my favorite.
Yes, that's awesome. Yeah, those are definitely good shows. You can never go wrong with a small town show. That's for sure. All right. Well, the final thing that we're going to do, we play a game called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20, and I'm going to ask you a corresponding question to that number that may or may not be about comedy.
All right, 19. 19.
That's
my lucky number.
All right. What's the weirdest place you've ever intentionally vomited?
Intentionally vomited?
Or unintentionally?
Oh,
sorry.
Unintentionally. Oh. That's a great one. Thanks for bringing up that memory.
We're God, working it
two.
All
there's two. There's two that are really bad. And I'm not sure which one to do. I was in high school. It turns out I had the stomach flu. I had no idea. My home life was such that you were better. It was better to go to school if you were sick than be at home if you were sick. Because if you're at home and you were sick, it was, they were just on you. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just suck it up and go to school. And I thought juice might help, like make my stomach feel better. So I got grape juice, and I went to Hill Murray, which is a parochial Catholic high school here, and we had to wear uniforms, gray and white, or light blue. And I don't remember what class I was in. I remember going, oh my God, I have got to throw up. I'm running towards the bathroom. And bear in mind, I'm wearing saddle shoes. They're quite slippery. I vomited purple all over. I painted the upstairs hallway.
Oh, wow.
And slipped and fell in as well. And grape does not come out of like light gray and white very well.
No, not so much.
And so then they make you, if you've ever like soiled yourself in school, then you had to go and then they give you someone else's clothes.
And they're always not the right size.
The girl skirt I wore for the rest of that day must have been a forward on the basketball team because it went down almost like my ankles. Like this was, and they were like, "Well, do you want to go home? We're going to call your mom." And I'm like, "I do, but also I don't because now I'm going to have to explain why my one good uniform that we got from Donald's over on the east side is all stained. My mom's not going to be able to get it out." I'm like, "I would rather just forgo that conversation because I'm not feeling well."
Let's just get through this day. That's great. That's a great story. All right. Well, where can people find you?
That's not creepy.
Not right.
No. Well, Tiffany Norton. TiffanyNorton.com is my website, which is woefully underupdated, and I need to work on that. Tiffany Norton Comedy on Instagram. I'm kind of, you know, Facebook, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And then are you still doing The Bitter Baker?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
and The Bitter Baker. Yeah. In fact, so I'm doing something new with it now. I haven't told a lot of people this yet.
Oh, breaking news. You might hear it here first.
Yeah, you actually kind of are. That's a sketch comedy series that I kind of just came up with about baking. Basically, I just complain. Yeah. I drink wine and I complain about stuff. And I bake.
Yeah, and that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, finding creative outlets during the pandemic. Because that's kind of how that stemmed, right?
I was doing it before the pandemic.
Oh, you were you?
Yeah,
okay.
I've actually been doing this now for a little over 2 years.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay, I didn't know that.
But what was weird was it was really hard when actually there was real things to complain about. It was really hard to come up with subjects because I'm like, well, crap. Like, there's real problems. Like, I'm like... And I don't like my neighbor. You know what I mean? It seemed dumb. Anyway, so I want to make a change in it. So we're going to start doing it actually live.
Oh, wow.
And it's going to be a live stream.
Wow.
So you will actually get to see all the mess ups, like, because for the last 2 years, we've done an outtakes episode for Christmas where it's all like me, just like all the stuff that gets cut out because I screwed it up. Nope. It's going to be on full display. And so I'm like, yeah. And the first episode we're going to do live or attempt to is Monday.
Oh, this Monday.
So The Bitter Baker on Facebook, also on YouTube.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you.
Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production. Hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.